Fork Tales, a podcast that feeds ideas to the food and beverage world. Fork Tales is brought to you by Vigor, a branding and advertising agency focused on the restaurant and hospitality industry, and by Quench, a food and beverage advertising agency that specializes in evolving iconic food and beverage brands. Learn more, visit vigorbranding.com and quenchagency.com. If you love what we're serving up, please give Fork Tales a 5-star review on your podcast service of choice. Think of it as a tip for good service.
Hello and welcome to Fork Tales. We're diving into the world of cannabis-infused beverages and edibles with a true industry pioneer. He's the founder of VCC Brands and CQ Drinks, pushing the boundaries of taste, technology, and THC. Kenny Morrison, welcome to Fork Tales, and thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. It's super cool to be here.
Yeah, I'm really kind of intrigued by all this because, I mean, you know, at Fork Tales, it's a podcast about, you know, restaurants because we have an agency called Vigor that does all restaurant marketing. And then we have a company called Quench, which does food and beverage CPG. Yeah. And so, you know, we talk about all kinds of things, food and beverage, and you do both. But really, obviously, what's unique about you is the infusion, right? And the THC. So how did you get into the cannabis industry? And what led to the creation of VCC Brands and CQ Drinks?
Well, first of all, I started the company in 2008, and we used to do everything. But as of 2020, now we're just strictly beverage. So we sort of put everything else to rest and wanted to have a laser focus on the future of drinking and all of that. So, yeah, but everything else plays into our background and how we got here. I guess I got into the cannabis industry because I had some friends who were exceptional cultivators, and they were a little scared to sell it through the appropriate channels back in 2006 because those appropriate channels were very new. Mm-hmm. In 2006, it was 10 years after Prop 215 was passed in California, right? That was the basically the original medical marijuana law in the United States, Prop 215. Mm-hmm. It passed in 1996, but it really took a good amount of years before it started expressing itself in the form of dispensaries, right? Mm-hmm. Storefronts where you could go, you know, join a club, a collective, and purchase cannabis. And so, as you can imagine, you know, people who'd been growing cannabis for decades were, you know, hesitant to kind of jump into the fray of that new economy, that new sort of above board world. And so I just kind of looked at it as, you know, visiting one of these early stores. It was almost kind of like an anthropological experiment for me, which really just means that I'm a thrill seeker. And, you know, I wanted to go in and check it out. And I went in there and I happened to meet one of the owners, and he was a surfer, so we hit it off. Long story short, I ended up making a documentary about his store. It was one of the first five in all of Los Angeles County. And within a month, he was like, put down the camera, help me open more stores. So I handed off like the documentary project to a friend. It never got finished. And I just found myself in the world of kind of, you know, retail cannabis.
That's wild. Now, you might want to keep that, and maybe the documentary evolves into yours, you know, like bring back that old footage and make it your story as this thing unfolds. Because I mean, it's fascinating. Obviously you're kind of like riding the wave, not to use the pun of surfing, but I know it's huge with you, but you're riding the wave of like, pop culture and the legalization and the, accessibility and education of this whole industry. So you're kind of like, you know, when you say that you knew cultivars a couple decades old, I mean, that wasn't legal then, right? I mean, that was, you know, you said they hid in the shadows.
Yeah, I mean, they were still, you know, the person I'm speaking of, I'm still hesitant to kind of say his name, but he's a childhood friend and he's on LinkedIn and he has a career in cannabis and he's consulting for various countries and governments now on cannabis. But yeah, he was a third generation cannabis farmer from Big wow. Sur. You know, his grandfather grew cannabis. His father grew cannabis. He moved to Amsterdam and was doing a lot of breeding. He kind of became one of the preeminent breeders who's created some very important kind of landmark strains. And yeah, so there's a lot of kind of history and pride and culture to it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, like, you guys have this like modern day moonshiners thing happening, right? It's like, you know, you see one day there'll be this documentary of like, you know, the reenactment of the growing and the whole thing. So I you know, look, I'm older, you know, I guess I've been around a little bit. And so it's a, you know, I'll say my mind had to evolve over, like, you know, when, you know, you did marijuana, it was illegal, but most people did it, especially younger people. And, you know, to your point about hiding it now, I'm kind of surprised. You know, I mean, just about how accessible and everything it is, and it is legal and it's okay. And there's, you know, there's a lot of great benefits to it all. So it's just, but it is a mind shift, right? We have to, I mean, you know, if maybe for someone like yourself, who's been around it for so long, it's really common in lifestyle. But I think for a lot of people, it is still like this thing, like, you know, you see a dispensary or whatever, and you might think, or you see it on a label of a product, you're like, oh boy, I got to stay away from that. That's bad. You know, it's we have to really, you know, educate, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it takes time to overcome stigmas and preconceptions and whatnot. I think one of the reasons I was sort of cut out for maybe this role was because ever since I was a little kid, my father never hid his cannabis use to me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even when I was 9 years old, he'd be like, hey, Kenny, I'm going to go get some grass. You want to come with me? And I would go with him to his dealer, who was a buddy. And I was, you know, ever the entrepreneur, I was 9 years old selling magazine subscriptions like we all did at, you know, elementary school back in the day. And he'd be weighing out my dad's eighth on the scale. And I'd say, hey, Vic, do you want to buy a magazine subscription? And, you know,
that's awesome.
My dad was buying something off him and he was buying something off me. So,
yeah. But to your point, like, you know, the stigma. Okay. So, you know, you know, maybe because I'm older, I equate things like to alcohol, right? It's like, well, there was a time when there's prohibition and then all of a sudden it was illegal. Like one of our clients that we work with at Quench is Yuengling. And Yuengling had been around before prohibition, and they were secretly kind of making beer during it, very quietly. And then when the laws changed, they had actually had a horse, you know, like a coach and four with kegs of beer at the White House the day it was legal. And, you know, if you do the math, the speed of a horse to get from Pennsylvania to Washington, they had already made the beer. You know what I'm saying? So, and the reason I'm saying that is, then we think about like Europe, and you hear like, well, there's no drinking ages in Europe. So kids have a glass of wine with dinner. Cause again, it is the stigma, right? So you were growing up with it. It's like really not that big a deal. I mean, like anything, if you abuse something, you abuse it and it maybe abuses you, but this is just, you know, a very much a normal thing for you. Right. I mean, it's been around.
Yeah. Honestly, I'm not even a huge cannabis user. I'm probably the person in my family who uses it the least amongst my mother, my father, my brother.
That's wild.
But you were talking about, I forgot what you were saying, but I was going to comment on it.
Yeah. I was just saying how like alcohol had, you know, there was prohibition, then it became legal. And I'm sure people's minds, it was like, oh, now, you know, this is legal. This was bad. And those people drink, you know, you're not supposed to, but it's the same with the cannabis. I mean, you know, people had always, it's always been around, you know, but to your point, in the shadows, and now it's in a lot of states. I know there's differences in different states and different people listening to this. It might be like, well, it's not legal here. You can't drink that here or whatever, but it is becoming more, I'll say, normalized. And, but in Europe, I was saying too about the stigmas, you know, in Europe, people drank at young ages, a glass of wine, a kid having a glass of wine with dinner is not a big deal because it wasn't made a big deal. It was just part of life and part of the, I'll say, the ritual of a dinner. So, you know, I just think it, you know, it's that kind of thing.
I wasn't around in the 20s and 30s, so I can't really comment on how stigmatized alcohol was or what devices or propaganda was used to stigmatize it. But my hunch is it hasn't really been subjected to the same levels of kind of propaganda as, you know, the stigmatization of cannabis has been.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're probably right. I mean, I think you're probably right. You know, the other thing that really surprised me, I'll say, is like, you know, being in business, I get to know a lot of other folks that are, you know, in different types of industries, right? And, you know, the stigma of, I'll say, what cannabis was, I'll say 15 or 20 years ago, there's a lot of folks in and around the area here that prominent families, I'll say, that just, they invested, right? They saw this as a massive opportunity in the world, and just from health benefits to just the recreational benefits. But, you know, I guess what I'm trying to say is I was surprised of the types of folks that came out to invest and build this out and everything else. Really, really, really cool in my mind.
Yeah. I think that's another thing too. There's probably a lot of closeted users or proponents of cannabis more mm-hmm. so than mm-hmm. there was probably in the 20s or 30s, you know, closeted consumers of alcohol, you know? But again, I'm just guessing.
Yeah. Very cool. So, okay. You know, I'm going to jump into some of your products and some of that. I know you said that, you're strictly focused on beverage, which I like that idea just from a marketer standpoint. I'll explain that in a little bit, but, talk about like sort of like the evolution of your business, like what you were doing, you know, what the brand stands for, as far as the acronym VC, you know, the VCC, you know, help me understand that, sure. Like where you've come from, and we'll get into the drinks.
Sure. We started the company in 2008 in Venice Beach. And, you know, my business partner and I at the time, I think the name Venice Cookie Company just sort of came naturally because it was the first thing we started making. Baked goods was really simple to do, very popular at the time. And, mm-hmm. you know, Venice Beach has always sort of stood for individualism and people marching to the beat of their own drummer and, you know, freedom of speech and freedom of choice and, you know, all of those sort of things. But to mix it up a little bit, you know, we made our logo a gondolier. So we brought a little bit of like classic old world to it. And the idea was just to, you know, create products that sort of transcended the stereotypical, you know, stoner presentation, you know, mm-hmm. and just make it be something normalized and acceptable and unstigmatized. So we were sort of envisioning a world without stigma before that existed.
Very cool. Very cool. What is, if I may ask, what's the CQ? What does that stand for in the drinks?
CQ stands for Cannabis Quencher.
There you go. All right.
So we have quench in common. But
there you go. I like it.
That came about because in 2012, the very first city in the U.S. to come up with cannabis regulations was San Francisco. And one of their, mm-hmm. their earliest set of regulations said that the word cannabis had to be the biggest word on your package. Like it had to be the biggest word on your label. And so I mm-hmm. said, okay, if that's going to be a rule, I'm going to put the word cannabis in the name of the product.
Man, so smart, good branding right there, man. Well done. You know, hey, you know, you lean into it, right? And make it recognizable. I love it. I love it. That's very, very, very smart. And so there's a lot of competition in cannabis infused beverages now. So how do you position CQ drinks differently from other brands?
For better or for worse, I don't really obsess over it too much. I think we have a pretty unique brand story, you know, and an authenticity that really can't be bought by some of our competitors. I do kind of pay particular attention to the female consumer. I think in general in cannabis historically, the you know, branding that's accessible to females has sort of been overlooked. And also I think by kind of shying away from playing into the cannabis donor stereotypes, it opens up your brand to be more accessible to the uninitiated. Right. And I think mm-hmm. that's where the, mm-hmm. I think that's where the future lies. There's definitely brands that do a better job of really communicating to today's hardcore dispensary consumer than us. Mm-hmm. And I think that's strategic by them and it's strategic by us, just the tact that we've taken.
Hey, I'll say for what it's worth, I love the tact you're taking. And again, just from, I'll say from the marketing perspective, Let's face it. We know that their alcohol consumption is down. You know, we know that the term California sober is a thing. And, you know, I know from, I have younger daughters. I know, like, you know, RTBs, ready to drink beverages, all these, you know, vodka or tequila, especially tequila now because the calories, all that stuff is so, so hot. And I know all these big houses that own these brands, whether they're liquor, wine, or beer, wine, and liquor, whatever they are, they're always looking for the next thing. And I got to think yours is, what you're doing is right there. And the other thing I'll say too, by the way, and I'm not placating here, I love your packaging. I think it's really, really, really well done. And we do packaging and we do branding. And I just, you know, credit where credit's due. It's excellent work. Excellent work.
Thanks. Thank you.
Good.
I forgot what I was going to say. You were just talking about branding and now you go ahead.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, what I was saying was that a lot of these houses are always looking for the next big thing, you know, and it's kind of funny, you know, again, we live on the, you know, we live on the East Coast. We, you know, our offices for our advertising agencies are Atlanta, Philadelphia, New York, and Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. I'm in the center of Harrisburg, in the center of Pennsylvania. So we go to the beach, right? Jersey Shore is a thing here, right? Maybe not as exciting or sexy as California, but it's like our thing, and it is. It's just a thing. But what I've done and what I do, being a marketer, is I watch what people are drinking in the summer, and I could gauge what the hottest trend was going to be in RTBs by what was popping up at our beach town. Like it would be, you know, whatever. If it was the Truly phase, the High Noon phase, the Surfside phase, all these brands, they would just pop and then they exploded for a year. And then they would, you know, they sort of go mainstream. And then, but then the next year, something else would pop. And yours has got to be one of those. I mean, I mean that. And just, I just feel like it's so, so on trend. So
I appreciate that. Yeah. I mean, you know, I don't want to claim to be any marketing genius. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, are impressing upon us at all the times that we should really pay a lot of attention to consumer segmentation. And in cannabis, a lot is just done on hunches.
Sure.
And guesses, right? We haven't had access to a lot of traditional data. And because I'm a surfer and, you know, because of my lifestyle, I just kind of feel like I've positioned the brand to almost be the Corona of cannabis.
Yeah.
Right.
Perfect.
Find your beach, yeah. You know,
yep.
A laid back, you know,
it.
Lifestyle. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and you said you're not, you know, doing segmentation, but you said you're kind of appealing to women, and you said you're, you know, the look, the feel. And to me, that's segmentation, and that's brilliant because, you know, I will say I don't have this fact in my back pocket, but I'm pretty sure that the seltzers of the world or the RTBs of the world really, really gain traction with females, right? I mean, you know, the guys are still out there drinking beer, and I know that's very, like, you know, sexist, if you will, or very, like, segmented, but it is a thing. I mean, that it really, they really brought that forth, and especially the calorie thing, and they still want to have fun and all that. So I think you're going down right down the right lane here. So, and then the other thing that I think is really super cool that you have, and you said it, and you should make sure you exploit it, is you have a story. You know, as an agency, we are hired to make stories a lot, and, you know, that's great and all, but it's even better when there is a true, you know, grounded story in a brand that you can tell that story over and over again and really, you know, allow people to feel a part of it. So you have something super cool that, you know, I always say, you know, the key to marketing is find your unfair advantage and exploit the shit out of it. So I
mean, yeah, yeah,
that's what you got, you know?
You know, to go back to the female thing, my theory has just been, look, if girls like to drink it, guys are going to drink it.
Sure.
You know, if girls are comfortable drinking it, guys are going to be comfortable drinking it, or will at least buy it.
Sure.
And your second point, what were you saying about that?
About the story. You just have a phenomenal, like a real story.
Yeah. We're basically, you know, you could say that we're sort of like the original prohibition cannabis beverage brand,
yeah.
You know? But yeah, I mean, the things we've been through to keep this thing alive, and you know, the precarious positions we have found ourselves in over the years, and the effort and the time and the risks we've taken. There's a ton of story there. It's a freaking novel. It's a it's an season or two of a Netflix show.
There you go.
And there's just, you know, so many crazy things we've been through. I can't even remember them all until some people remind me. But you know, Kelly, who I now refer to as my co-founder, she's been with me since 2010. Company was founded in 2008. And her and I together, she always ran our kitchen and oversee the production team and oversaw the production team and all the different SKUs we were managing. And the things that her and her team have done to keep us in business over the years is amazing. And it, you know, often brings me to tears when I talk about it and think about it. So yeah, there's a lot of story there to exploit, probably more than we will ever need. but you know, the goal is to get to a place to where we can really, really tell that story in sort of a deep, profound way.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you know, it just, the whole surfer vibe, the whole, like you said, Corona, I mean, but you know, a couple Corona with, like you said, Prohibition and that whole, like, you know, maybe it started out as like, you know, a nighttime sort of like, you know, in the shadows, if you will, vibe type of thing, but it's the beach, it's cool. You know, those were all the fun people, the cool people. And then you can let that story kind of unfold for people. And I think everyone can relate to it and appreciate it. I think that's, you know, there was this great campaign. And I forget, and you might know it because you're a surfer, but I'm just an ad geek, right? An advertising marketing geek. It was a thing. It was, they showed this like sort of, it's probably like not politically correct now, maybe a dorky looking kid. Right. And with whatever he's wearing at the time, just a picture of a dorky looking kid. And the line was, if you don't surf, don't start. Like it just totally shoved the world like in your face. Like, you know, surfing's for super cool people that only they get it. Don't even think you can try and do it and don't even try and be cool. But it was like the most, I don't know, it was most off-putting, but super cool marketing, I think that was for a brand.
I think that was a gotcha ad from like the late 90s to the early 2000s. And then the other one that was always huge was Billabong's Only a Surfer Knows the Feeling.
Yeah.
But to go back to story and what you were talking about with, you know, the surf thing and all that, the history of cannabis smuggling in California and Mexico, the earliest people that were smuggling cannabis into California from Mexico in the 60s were surfers.
Yeah.
Were pro surfers because they were the guys who had a perfect story about why they were going over the border in a bus, you know, and they were bringing back, you know, trucking back and forth their big giant surfboards, and people were gouging those surfboards, gouging the foam out of them and filling those surfboards with pounds and pounds of pot and glassing them back up and bringing them over the border. So there's definitely, I mean, I have a movie idea based around all of this as well. You know, so
hey, that would make super cool shorts for social media and all that for your brand too. Don't, you know, the movie's great, but I mean, you know, you got to sell stuff here. So
true.
That's the marketer in me. And on that, I think I'd mentioned right before we started talking, you know, a lot of times we'll have a client, we're actually, talking to someone right now. We're starting off a really cool brand, but it's a style of cooking. I'll say, you know, I don't want to give the whole thing away, but a style of cooking. So there's a big part of it. Like we have to educate people about this style of cooking and why it's so important and all the nuances about it and all the great things about it. But it's like, yeah, but that's a style of cooking. That's not your brand. We got to sell your brand, right? So in your situation, and again, that can be difficult because it's expensive to do marketing or PR. And it's so you want to tell the story of the industry or the product, but we really need to tell the story of our brand. So where I'm going with all this is there's an awful lot to the THC and to cannabis and in liquids. It is a newer thing. So now we have to educate on one side, but we can't spend our money and time too much spending on education because we also want to sell our product. So where I'm going with this, okay, nano emulsification. Okay. That's the fast acting THC. That's a kind of a big deal, right? And can you talk about that and you know how it is in your beverages and like sort of like, you know, I think most people understand alcohol, right? You know, if I weigh X amount of pounds, if I drink three or four beers within 2 hours, I've got to be watching, you know, if I'm over the limit. So talk about like, you know, nano emulsification, THC, and how much is in it and all that kind of good stuff.
Nano emulsified cannabis oil is used by everybody pretty much. You know, it's just really a way of increasing the surface or area of a cannabis oil droplet, right? And by increasing the surface area, you increase the bioavailability of it. So it allows you to experience the effects faster. You know, I think it'll be around forever. I think it's sort of like a slimmer MacBook or an iPhone. It's just something that the consumer will take for granted at this point and never be disappointed if the newer iteration hits a little faster, works a little quicker. You know, the places where you can do some interesting things, I don't think anyone has a problem with the product hitting you faster. Whether or not they want it to go away faster, the offset is where you can probably dial it in based on who your consumer is. You know, some people want a fast onset and a fast offset. Some people want a fast onset, but a slow offset. So I think, yeah, the technology will continue to sort of evolve and offer consumers some new things.
But it's sort of, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I very well may be, but when we talk about the beverage, I mean, don't you think people are equating the THC infused beverage with an alcoholic beverage? Because it's like, that's what I know. I know if I drink three Manhattans in an hour, I've got some issues. I mean, as far as, you know, being able to drive and things like that. So just understanding your body type and all that. I mean, is it fair to say that it's important to get your beverages, when I say to line up from a knowledge standpoint of what I should use, how much I should use, you know, and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, you know, cannabis drinks are their own thing, but obviously we're all trying to target, you know, the alcohol consumer looking to moderate their alcohol consumption, right? And for the person with no experience with cannabis, you know, the easiest analogy is to make it similar to alcohol.
Right.
And yeah, I think when a cannabis drink affects you as quick as an alcoholic drink does, that's going to most definitely increase the consumership. And you know, we're getting there. And then at the same time, cannabis is a different thing. Not everybody who uses cannabis or cannabis drinks is using it as a replacement for alcohol. But again, I think across the board, no one has a problem with their cannabis drink hitting them faster.
Right. Because, I mean, for those that don't know, I mean, I think typically it was a slower build, right? Or it was a slower, it took a little bit longer. So people might consume more thinking, oh, this isn't working or whatever else. And it might, you know, it might multiply a little bit.
Yeah, there's still also a lot of misunderstandings about, you know, the time it takes for cannabis to hit you. Some people think cannabis is going to affect you faster on an empty stomach. The truth is it matters what's in your stomach, right? Cannabis is lipophilic, so it THC binds to fats. So if you just ate a bowl of ice cream and then you drink a cannabis drink, you might have a more profound impact from that from that drink based on, you know, the fatty substances in your bloodstream.
Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what other misconceptions are there about cannabis beverages that you're working to change? And again, I know when you got to sell your brand, but there's also this whole industry. There's a lot of people out there that, you got a lot of consumers in front of you, and you know that. I mean, there's a big opportunity here. So what are some of the other misconceptions that you have to kind of navigate?
That they taste bad or they're too strong, right? Everyone's had a bad experience with edibles, right? In college or whatever. We've all gone too far, taken more than we wanted, gotten higher than we expected, had a bad experience. And so that's a lingering obstacle to overcome, right? And it's like, you know, the microdose, super low dose beverages do a lot to address that. Even then, still people are hesitant to try them. You know, sure, you can say that cannabis drinks taste bad or are too strong, but I think it's as true for cannabis as it is for alcohol.
Sure. You know, Sure. Well, I was going to say too, I think everybody has had that experience with alcohol too, where, oh, that night we drank all that tequila. I can't even stand the smell of tequila anymore. So, I mean, you know, the whole too much indulgence, you know, I think everybody has experienced that as much as well. So
I'll say this too. It's been interesting because it's sort of proved out my theory of, you know, targeting predominantly, you know, skewing a little female with the products. When we're doing a tasting or a demo somewhere, and people are passing us by on the sidewalk, and I say, hey, would you like to try a drink? I'd say 7 to 8 times out of 10, if it's a couple walking by, it's the girl. It's wow. the girlfriend who pulls yeah. their boyfriend or their husband over to yeah. take a sample and try a taste. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it might be that men have had more experience with cannabis, that men are a little more resistant to trying it just because they're more yeah. likely to have had a bad experience with it. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just think, again, you know, from my standpoint, just from the marketing standpoint, I love that you have the story. I love the story that you have. And I love the fact that you have this sort of female skew, whether intentional, unintentional, whatever. I just love that. Cause I just think that's going to serve you well. That's going to serve you very well long term. So, you know, how do you think cannabis brands can build consumer trust, especially like among new users? Is it really an understanding of the percentage of THC? Is it that kind of a thing? Or how do you move forward in that regard?
I think you just have to have a reliable product. You got to have great customer service, and you got to be honest. I think honesty is particularly important in the cannabis industry. And for connecting with seasoned cannabis consumers, not that we're always targeting seasoned cannabis consumers, but, I think you can sort of make people's, you know, eyes get crossed and glazed over when you talk too much about the technical aspects, mm-hmm. You know, nano emulsification, all of these, you know, all of this can, you know, kind of go over people's heads. Even talking about the terpene content or the, you know, the cultivars of cannabis used, all of that stuff. It's important. That helps you attract a certain subset, a certain niche. But I think just, you know, you're an advertising guy, you know better than me, like authenticity, honesty, great mm-hmm. customer mm-hmm. service, a reliable, repeatable experience with the product. I think, you know, it's pretty standard, just like any other CPG.
Right. That's right. And, you know, I think the other key word that you said there is trust. You know, once your brand's out there, people see it and you can get it. I mean, one thing we expect from brands, I don't care if it's a restaurant brand or if it's a brand of ice cream, right? Or it's a THC, you know, infused beverage. When we get used to a brand, the definition, my favorite definition of branding or a brand is a promise. Right. So when I see your can, that is a promise. I know what I'm getting. It's consistency. It's always going to be the same, no matter where I buy it. It's your promise to me. And to me, I think that's huge. And especially for this industry, because to your point, you know, there's going to be a lot of people trying this for the first time, maybe, right? Instead of drinking that, seltzer on the beach or whatever. And they want to trust because, you know, it's new. And I think that, again, I think that's another key thing for you, which I think is great. So talk about it, because, like, you know, in beer, we know that there's like light beers or session beers. We're also doing that in your product too, right?
Yeah. You know, that's kind of a big riddle for everybody right now. It's like, do we make the product low dose and sessionable? And then you have some people commenting on social media, the potency of that product is made for an ant. You know, it's it's something that makes cannabis very different than alcohol, is because cannabis is non-toxic, right? Mm-hmm. And intoxicated is basically a euphemism for something that's toxic, right? That's how we talk mm-hmm. about alcohol. Yep. That's sort of the benefit of the doubt we give alcohol, right? Due to the stigma that's worn away for decades and decades. But because cannabis is non-toxic, the tolerances for cannabis vary far greater than people's tolerance for alcohol. Mm-hmm. You know, so, you know, what might be an appropriate dose for you versus me versus someone else in cannabis is way, way, way different than alcohol. And there is no sort of one-to-one, you know, comparison. They are not analogous in that way at all.
But like alcohol, wouldn't it be though, once you understand your, and maybe I'm wrong on this assumption, but once I understand my body type, right? Like I'll say my wife, if I drink a martini, I'm fine. I can feel it a little bit. If my wife drinks one martini, she's like, okay, I can't have two. Do you know what I mean? She's much smaller than I am. So is the cannabis beverage the same? I mean, is it gonna, if we have the same beverage, her and I, is it like, I might, because of my size, my body mass is bigger, you know, is it, do I have a higher tolerance or not really?
A couple things. Cannabis is biphasic. I like to nerd out on some of the words sometimes, but I'll take you back to this. I mean, you know, in the early days when we started Venice Cookie Company and I was, you know, the original sales guy taking the products from store to store to store, you know, we had one dispensary owner who was like, that was so strong. I don't ever want to see one of those again. And
gotcha.
That's bad. Right? That's definitely not what you want to hear when you're trying to build a brand. You know, that was so strong. I don't ever want to see one of those again. And so obviously for cannabis, it makes perfect sense that we start the doses really, really small for the uninitiated, that the seasoned consumer says that's a ridiculously small dose and would do nothing for me. You know, we're just in this season where it's going to take people some time to sort of get their sea legs and get that understanding. You know, we used to make, 1,000 milligram brownie, right? That brownie was not intended to be eaten in one sitting. And the people who were purchasing it understood that. But the person with minimal cannabis experience would tell us that's the most irresponsible product I've ever seen. And you should not be able to make that. You know, no one holds up a jar of ibuprofen and says 50,000 milligrams. That's irresponsible.
Yeah, you right.
No one holds up a handle of Jack Daniels and says that's irresponsible.
Right.
Right. There's an understanding that, well, sure, it's a gallon of whiskey, but you drink it by the shot. You know, so I just think we're in this season where, you know, the general knowledge of cannabis is slowly, gradually building up. And then, you know, when it's more mainstream, people have an understanding, you know, the understanding that you feel they all need. And you're right, you know.
It's, I mean, it, you know what it is, it's an educational, it's an understanding process. It's a, you know, it's the ramping up. And that's why I get excited for your brand. Cause I do think you have something pretty phenomenal. So now you said, okay, like we talked about, someone's intoxicated. That's an alcohol term because of the toxic aspects of alcohol. So, I mean, your product, the one thing that's, I'll say, not, there's, I'm sure several things. That's what I want to ask you. Hangover free. I mean, geez, people that drink, they would love not to have a hangover. So this is basically hangover free, right? I mean, by and large.
Well, I never went into what biphasic means, but I've definitely gotten a hangover from too much cannabis.
Oh, have you? Okay.
I mean, it wasn't in the form of a headache. It wasn't in the form of being dehydrated. It wasn't in the form of being completely worthless the next day. You know, but I've definitely experienced sort of a cloudy, you know, zonked out feeling from cannabis. So, it's, you know, it's a different type of hangover and it's dose dependent, right? So yeah, you know, ways where cannabis and alcohol truly are different, you know, cannabis, promotes sleep and suppresses inflammation, whereas alcohol is going to disrupt sleep and promote inflammation, you know? So they're different, you know, they're both functional beverages, alcohol and cannabis, right? And I love alcohol. I love to drink alcohol. And I, you know, there's a lot of cannabis people who sometimes want to poo-poo alcohol. And I think that's silly. You know, we're in the business of freedom of choice here.
There you go.
But yeah, but they're different. And I think it is more realistic to refer to cannabis as a wellness product than it is to refer to alcohol as a wellness product, you know.
Yeah.
A smart activist before me said that you know, cannabis should be perceived as a benefit to be promoted rather than a harm to be tolerated, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well said.
Sure. Yeah, you know, cannabis can be overused. Not everyone has a great experience with cannabis. And, you know, a part of it, I'm sort of rambling here, but a part of it is really how we feel about our use of cannabis. I've had a lot of people tell me, oh, I don't have any legitimate real reason to use cannabis. I just use it recreationally. This was years ago. But when you inquire and you go, really, why do you use cannabis? Just tell me, why do you use it? Well, I mean, I guess after a long day at the office when I've been working really hard, I just want to unwind and relax. Mm-hmm. You know, people have sort of been conditioned to think that that's not a legitimate use of cannabis, you know?
Yeah.
Even the fact that we, even the fact that we refer to cannabis use as, you know, medical or recreational, it's like, well, isn't recreation a wonderful way to get rid of stress?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
There's nothing wrong with going sailing recreationally.
Yeah,
you know what
that's
I mean?
Right.
So it's really just these lingering ways we've been wired to think about cannabis that you're mentioning. You know, it's pervasive. And it takes a long time for that to dissipate.
Mm-hmm. So we talked a lot about, obviously it's a different deal with the legalization of things and state by state. So we work with brands. We've worked with a couple different beer brands that were, one was a Canadian beer that we drove across the US. One was the Pennsylvania beer I mentioned. We've driven up and down the East Coast and are slowly growing, not slowly growing, but growing it. And you were in four states. How many states are you in 2022? How many states are you in now?
In the dispensary channel, as of today, we're in 7 states. As of the next 45 or 50 days, we'll be in 8.
Nice.
And then we're coming for Pennsylvania soon, buddy.
Good. All right. Well,
yeah,
looking
yeah.
forward to it. Yeah, that's awesome. And so, but it's not, you can't just, it's not like, oh, we're just going to open up a distributor there. There's laws and you have many more hurdles than I'll say our beer brand that wants to go from say an Ohio over into say Kentucky or wherever else. So you have a lot more to deal with.
Yeah. Well, we're in 7, you know, going on 8 states in the dispensary channel, which is where all the high, you know, regulatory barriers are, right?
Yeah.
You know, for the viewer who doesn't quite understand this, there's the word hemp and there's the word cannabis and there's the word marijuana, right? The words marijuana and hemp are just legal definitions of cannabis. Mm-hmm. It's all cannabis. It's all the same plant, right? So marijuana is just the hemp biomass or the cannabis biomass that has a high percentage of THC in it. And it's highly regulated because there's more THC concentration in that plant. And so it's sort of subjected to a litany of regulations that are far more difficult to deal with than hemp. Never mind the fact that I can extract marijuana or hemp and create the same exact potency cannabis drink. If the starting material was hemp, that product can cross state lines. If the extracted material was marijuana, it can't cross state lines. It's really as if we're regulating vodka made from potatoes differently than, you know, vodka made from a grain or, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. So, it's kind of doesn't make a lot of sense, but hey, that's how prohibition is crumbling.
Yeah. Well, and again, I do appreciate you explaining it that way because look, our listeners are food and beverage marketers or restaurateurs. So, I mean, I know a lot of times when you're doing these podcasts and stuff, you're talking to other, you know, you're talking to quote unquote, the industry that you're in and, you know, and advocating to, you know, for others in the industry. And I'll say there's probably a higher, you know, knowledge base of the overall cannabis industry than some of the folks that'll be watching this. So this is really, I really appreciate you making this super easy to get and understand. And it's cool. So what's next for you? Like, okay, we have these great drinks. You know, is there more flavors, just more expansion? What's next on your agenda?
Something I'm really looking forward to doing that I've never done is working with an advertising agency.
Oh, there you go.
To be honest.
I know one.
right? Yeah, I bet you do.
We've got your name in it.
You know, I come from a family that's sort of involved in, you know, PR and marketing and advertising, mm-hmm. a little bit communications. But first of all, on the marijuana side of things, in the dispensary channel, we do licensing deals with all these different states. And so mm-hmm. we make products that are appropriate for that territory.
Gotcha.
So we sort of are able to outsource our R&D hub and do mm-hmm. a lot of that R&D and market research on, you know, the dime of our licensing partners. Mm-hmm. You know, so we exploit differences in regulations mm-hmm. and consumer tastes in every different state that we operate in.
And these are all beverages, correct?
Yeah. These are all beverages.
Okay, all beverages. That's what I thought. I just want to be clear.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we're gathering a ton of information based on the success of those products in their territories. Mm-hmm. And then we can sort of distill all that info and release in hemp, you know, our products that can cross state lines, sort of the greatest hits, make it into mm-hmm. our hemp lineup. Some of this is theoretical so far because we haven't released a lot of products in the hemp channel yet. Mm-hmm. But sort of symbiotic how our two business models work together, right? We oversee mm-hmm. the hemp channel ourselves. We do licensing deals with all the different states in the dispensary channel. And we think, you know, what we learn from the more experienced, veteran, higher dose consumer, all that knowledge will serve us really well as the hemp consumer, you know, gets more educated over time. So, cool. Yeah, we sort of have that dual approach.
So just so I'm clear, when you create these beverages for the various states with their, you know, with their certain, their restrictions, if you will, or the regulations, are you white labeling it or is it still CQ, but it's just maybe a different formulation of CQ in one state versus another?
Yeah. You know, sometimes it's as simple as just a difference in potency. Sometimes it's a difference in, you know, the manufacturing equipment that's being used. So we have to change mm-hmm. the formula slightly.
Gotcha.
And then sometimes it's something completely new that, you know, is being requested specifically by that territory.
But it's still under the same brand. So if I bought, I bought a beverage in one state versus another, even though the formulation may be tweaked a little bit based on their rules and regulations, it's still the same brand I'm looking at and I'm picking up.
I'll share this with you. This was amazing. The first licensing deal we did, you know, we're a born and raised California brand and sure. I'm a born and raised California guy, but our very first licensing deal was in the state of Massachusetts. Mm. And I'm like such a West Coast dude. What the hell do I know about seasons, right? It's sunny year round in California.
Yeah.
And our partner, Kevin in Massachusetts, he was like, Kenny, you know, these fruit flavored, you know, spritzers you've made for us to sell, they're great, they're cool, they're beautiful and everything. He's like, but no one drinks White Claw in the wintertime
right
here in Massachusetts. I was like, huh? I was like, really? Yeah. He's like, yeah. He's like, you know, we drink a pumpkin stout or whatever come right fall. And I was like, okay. Like, I was just very honest, like, okay, yeah, I didn't even realize that. He's like, yeah, make a cola, make a mm-hmm. ginger ale. He's like, give me some things that aren't going to be affected by the seasons.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
And I had to think about it over the weekend. I was like, that's totally off brand. We're a fruit forward tropical beverage brand. And then I thought about it over the weekend and I said, what do I have to lose? This guy's willing to put my name on a formula based on an idea that he thinks will work in New England. Came back Monday. I said, let's do it. And now these are the products that have really taken us to a whole nother level in the Midwest, mm-hmm. right? Soda mm-hmm. pop.
Sure.
And I think you just got to be willing to kind of, you know, be open-minded and try new things. And, you know, in the cannabis world, you know, maybe your brand doesn't just have to be as sort of segmented as would be expected in, mm-hmm. you know, mainstream CPG.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. All right. So we're going to play one quick game here towards the end. Okay. We have this thing we put together called High or Hype. So we're going to end up with a rapid fire Q&A, you know, and so in the cannabis industry,
what does high mean?
Yeah. High is going to be, it's legit. So high is good. Okay. It's true. And hype is just that. It's just hype. All right. So, all right. We talked about this earlier. Fast acting THC, high or hype?
Legit. High.
Okay. High. CBD infused cocktails.
Hype.
Celebrity cannabis brands.
Hype.
THC infused cold brew coffee.
TBD. I don't know.
It felt like one of those where you were like, I've not really heard of it yet, but that's not a bad idea. So, you know, I don't want to poo-poo it. This could be my next thing. Okay. Cannabis beverages in a post-workout or hangover recovery drink.
Hi.
Cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
All right. So you've been phenomenal. This has been great. I got an education, so thank you. And I'm totally intrigued by this again. And I'm truly not selling here. You know, we build brands and talk about all these great products. But most of the time, I mean, it's very rare that we get to work on something that, or a category that's so, I'll say new, if you will, even though it's not new, but it's new to the consumer market. Right. And so you get to, so it's just, I'm just really, my brain's spinning 1,000 miles an hour. So this has been phenomenal for me personally. And I have one last question. Okay. Yeah. If you had one final meal, what would you eat and why?
Oh man. Gosh. I mean, it would probably be something that I just don't have access to here in the Dominican Republic. But like one thing I've been thinking about lately is this garlic shallot cream sauce that I make with, it's just super, super duper rich. And it's the type of meal that would probably lead to your death anyway. So maybe that'd be the last thing I eat.
That's great. That's fantastic. Now, see, if it were me and, you know, you're California, I would have said In-Out Burger, right? But because, you know, whenever I land, which I will land there on Tuesday afternoon, I'll be there. So I'll have and as soon as I hit the tarmac, I always find In-Out and then do my business. So anyway, that's fantastic.
It could be a cheesesteak for me. Who knows? Oh,
there you go. Philly cheesesteak. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Beautiful. Very well. Okay. It was awesome. Thank you so much for your time. Enjoy the Dominican. Hopefully you get some surfing in, and it's been awesome. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.